Okay, namaste. So, welcome to this series on the core is, of course, Sri Aurobindo, his yoga teachings, practices. And just to give a little background, because the word evokes different meanings to the Indian mindset. Though we have, of course, come a long way from the days of the sannyasin, but still this idea that yoga has to do with otherworldliness hangs very strong in the Indian mind. And therefore often people believe that if you want to dedicate yourself to God, you must cut yourself off from the world. So what we need to understand is, Sri Aurobindo says very powerfully, this world is God fulfilled in outwardness. So Sri Aurobindo's yoga draws its breath, if I may say so, or it continues the great tradition of the Vedas as they were understood at a point of time, which was about an integral truth, not this worldly or that worldly, but reorganizing this world, drawing the powers of the spirit, so this world can become a better and better place, more harmonious place, full of truth, and freed from all this ignorance and slavery and bondages of various kinds, of fear, anxieties, worries, to which we are naturally prone. So this is the Vedic lore which continues, and we see it powerfully expressed again in Sri Krishna's teachings. So Sri Krishna, again we see that he emphasizes that even the man who is free must act. Why he must act? To carry the march of humanity forward. And with this little background, we come straight to today's subject. Today's subject is India and the roadmap to the future. And we may raise a question, what has a yogin got to do with India? Somebody who is a practitioner of the yoga. Often it is even considered that, you know, a yogin should not meddle into politics and businesses and various things. So just to clear that, we can start with this idea that why India? What is the place of India? Is Bharat simply a piece of land? And Sri Aurobindo reminds us it's not a piece of land. It's a goddess, and the physical boundaries are a Yajna Vedi. And all of us must be ready to offer ourselves as sacrifice in the flames of aspiration for a better India, a new India, a resurgent India. So patriotic sentiments are not inconsistent with yoga. The mother says they are consistent with yoga. And patriotic sentiments can be expressed in any field. It's not necessary that one has to be in politics or business to contribute to nation building. A nation is built by the people who are involved. And whatever our vocation, wherever we may be are, we may be placed by destiny, by the divine within, or maybe our own even ignorant choices, still we can contribute to a national yoga. So Sri Aurobindo looked upon Indian nation as engaged in a national yoga. And this yoga, he said, has three stages. One, when the very nation stage, when the yoga begins, and he compares it with the story of Sri Krishna's birth, that the birth is in the prison. So India's yoga begins in the prison. It is imprisoned, it is a slave, subject to another nation. And in that prison, we see the first stirrings of yoga. So the names of those who were the first ones to initiate this process are well known. And this yoga begins, its first stage is initiation. And the second stage is when it begins to free itself. So this is the stage which is going on when we have freed ourselves from physical slavery, but we have not freed ourselves from the intellectual slavery, from even emotional slavery and various kinds of slaveries which we have succumbed to. And the third stage is when, having freed ourselves completely, we begin to play the right role. That means manifestation of God. So these are the three stages of yoga, any yoga. First is initiation. That means we take to the path of yoga. The second is that we are freed, traversing that journey. We are freed from the fundamental ignorance. And we are ourselves. Sri Aurobindo has a very beautiful, we are ourselves. And the third stage is when we manifest, become instruments for manifesting the divine in the nation, in humanity, and, you know, in the world consciousness at large. So with that, there comes another question. And that other question is when people often say, Yesterday, for example, someone was asking, why should we speak about India? Well, we should speak about India because we are Indians. So we should not shy away from speaking about India, about Bharat. We should not be speaking about America and Russia and Europe because, well, Europeans have a right to speak about Europe. And Americans have a right to speak for themselves and they don't hesitate in speaking. But we are Bharatiya and we should speak about Bharat because this is what destiny and God again have placed us here. And while we are here, we must look after the highest and the greatest interests of Bharat. So in this process, what is the first step? And that's what I'm going to read a passage from Sri Aurobindo as a kind of invocation. The first step is Swaraj. That's how Sri Aurobindo, he used these words which you can apply in even in our yogic practices. Interestingly, Swaraj, Swadeshi, boycott, education as a way of reforming. All these will apply as much to the national yoga as it was used for winning the freedom. Sri Aurobindo had given this roadmap, incidentally, and in the background of Bande Mataram. So when we use the word Bande Mataram as the background, what it means is that why are we really feeling about India or wanting to do something about her? Certainly not for a piece of land. So there are people who say, but after all, it's a piece of land. If it's a piece of land, then, well, there's nothing so special about one piece of land except that we are here and therefore we must defend our house. That's a very primitive savage mentality that, you know, a savage also defends the house. But it's not about defending the house. It's about defending the ideals and the values we stand for. So India is a Yajurvedi, and to defend India means not just defending a piece of land. It's to defend the ideals for which India stands and has stood for the ages. So what is the importance and significance of these ideals? Its importance is that these ideals can still save the world. Because if we leave aside these great and high ideals for which India has stood, then we see, we look further east, we look west, we look Middle East. What is it that we find there? We have ideas, ideologies, religions which have destroyed the world nearly, brought it on the brink and still have the potential to create more damage. So it's important that we understand the significance of India. It's not just for India. It's not definitely not for a piece of land. It's for the sake of the world. It's for the sake of the world that India must rise. India must awake. Because we have to stand by the side of these great ideals for the sake of humanity. Why do we say so? Because the very fact, if you look at the entire history of India, we see that always, always it has shown the way. And always its ideals have inspired right from the days, what we call as Aryan invasion, or there was no Aryan invasion. There was no Aryan probe, may have been a migration, we don't know. But there was certainly no invasion. But it is true that the thought of India went out far and wide. And even till today, it continues to influence different sections of the world. So, with this little background, I'll read something from Sri Aurobindo. I will speak a little louder. I think that should be fine. Okay. So, this is a passage from Sri Aurobindo's early writings from the Karma Yogin. And this, in fact, is a speech. And it's a speech that he gave in Kolkata, the second after his Uttarpada speech. And this is a speech which he gave on Biden Square in Kolkata. And very interestingly, this speech was given on 13th of June. Actually, I didn't think about the date, but it's interesting. It was given on 13th of June 1909, as close as we can get. And there, Sri Aurobindo gives us the first glimpse of what is the way to the future as far as India is concerned. So as I said, background is Bande Mataram. We have to stop looking at India as a piece of land, but we have to look upon her as a living goddess. In fact, Sri Aurobindo says this is the secret which can even unite the different factions. The sense of the mother, that has to come. And how is it going to come? I would say with partly through bold decisions and partly through applying it in our everyday life. For instance, here In some places I know, in Odisha and some other places I know, people greet each other with Bande Mataram. Now maybe we may not be able to enact, and why not? I think we should enact it in the parliament. We should have it openly. We should not be shying away or afraid, because that is like a mantra. Janagana Mana is a song. Bande Mataram is a mantra. This mantra had galvanized the whole nation. So why can't it galvanize the masses now? And well, government acts in its own way. But at least whenever we meet each other, we can greet with this very simple greeting, Bande Mataram. So this is the background. She is the mother. India is the mother, a goddess. And we see that Sri Aurobindo beautifully invoking the divine mother as goddess Durga, who is the Adhishtatri Devi of India, of Bharat. And then the first step is Swaraj. So one would say, but Swaraj we have won already. But we should hold on. What Sri Aurobindo says, page 16. And he says that even if we cannot do anything, still, even that would not stop the movement. So even if everybody was gagged, even if nobody was allowed to speak, still it would not stop the movement. Look at it, Sri Aurobindo's faith at that point of time. And we start feeling that if this doesn't happen, what may happen? If this happens, what may happen? And look what he says. Why he says that? He says, the kingdom of heaven is within you. To them too, he might say, the kingdom of Swaraj is within you. And what is this Swaraj? Let them win and keep that kingdom of Swaraj. The sense of the national separateness and individuality, the faith in its greatness and future. This is Swaraj. It means we believe in the greatness of Bharat and we live for Bharat. We want to express the Bhartiyata in our life and actions. So this is what is Swaraj. The feeling of God within ourselves and in the nation. The determination to devote every thought and action to his service, to her service. Here, no coercion or repression could interfere. Here there was no press law or sunset regulation. He is speaking about it during the Bande Mataram days. That well, even if the British government were going to use any amount of coercion and separation, the heart, if it is freed itself from that shackle, continues to chant that, continues to believe in the future and the destiny, then things will happen. And it was a law of the psychology of men and nations that the Brahman, once awakened within, must manifest itself without, and nothing could eventually prevent that manifestation. So the important thing is to awaken that Brahman, that Yoga Nishtha, that is Swaraj. Swaraj is literally self-rule. So self-rule, in fact, Sri Aurobindo says political freedom is important so that we can be ourselves. So political freedom, its necessity is so that we can truly seek the Swaraj that we are, we want to really. So political Swaraj is only a step toward that true inner Swaraj. That means we discover ourselves, who we are, and we live according to that. Now we see that process has started. And we should not be worried there would be setbacks. Some people get worried about, the present scenario since you were mentioning. Well, these setbacks come to make us sincere. After all, we have to understand such a great and high endeavor as India wants to, to be an example of the world. We use the word Vishwaguru. How does one become a guru? It's not an easy task. One cannot become a guru if one is harboring ambitions, if one is harboring greed, if one is afraid, if one is, always worried about what may happen, what may not happen. A guru is a harbinger of light. A guru is a receptacle of light. He is a vehicle of light, a vessel of light. A guru is someone who, if he stands at one place, hundreds are inspired to emulate those ways. And well, we started well, but as happens invariably, and that would touch upon that other question, that politics and yoga, that in politics and financial world, we must know the difficulty are the two most impervious domains. And the mother said that these two will be the last to change. Why? Because politics is a field of ambition and lust for power. And finance, lust for wealth. The three doors to hell. Lust for power, ambition, and yes, money. So these are the three powers which have always been usurped by the asura. There is a long stamp, and invariably, wherever these things are there, there is an intense play of the asuric forces. Look how Kali Yuga was ushered in, because Parikshit, you know, Kali is about to die, he is about to kill him, and he says, no, you have to give me some place, I am part of your kingdom. So he says, okay, where do you want to stay? He says, wherever there is gold. And so he jumps into the crown of the king. So we need to understand the difficulty. It's very, as the mother says, it's, you know, success is the most difficult test to pass. When one is, you know, not doing so well, let's come to the election part, for example. When you are facing challenges, when you are standing for a high ideal, you are in your full swing, because you are the person who is the on the, you know, other side. But the moment you sit on the throne, it's quite likely, if not immediately, over a period of time, the very same forces that were occupying one throne try to occupy you. And one has to be very, very careful, very, very vigilant. And the slightest insincerity in times like this is going to hit very hard. Shobindu used the word that this is an hour of God. And each insincerity of nature, once thy defense against the eye of the master and the light of the ideal, becomes now a gap in thy armor and invites a blow. So if you ask me in one line from the yogic perspective, what happened? While we can blame and all kinds of things may be there, but at the bottom there is an insincerity. At bottom, you know, the ego came in. At bottom, something of like an ambition came in. And we have to understand that part. I mean, when we serve India, we serve India. There is nobody else. No individual, nothing can be greater than this Bharat Mata, for whom we all should stand by. Look, what does Ram say? How does he galvanize his people? He doesn't galvanize by saying, you are fighting for my wife, for Rama. He says, you are fighting for Dharma. And even a man like Alexander understood it. Because every time the soldiers wanted to go back, he would say, what face you will show to your motherland when you go there, to the Greeks? He doesn't say that, look here, what, where is your loyalty to me? He doesn't say that. He says, when you go back, would you like to go back a defeated lot? And it was this that galvanized. So we need to understand, and it's a very small thing to do a course correction. But the course correction has to be within. If we don't correct within, we are likely to be further paralyzed by fears and do even more wrong actions, be afraid of taking the right decisions. And the right decision in the Indian context is Dharma. When we stand for Dharma, we stand for Dharma. We don't need to justify, explain, or want to be popular, or want everybody to, you know, accept us. A man can either gain popularity or he can stand by truth. So one should be very clear. Even Sri Krishna was, you know, many things were spoken against him on the battlefield by Bhurishrava. All these great ones who have gone, they have shown the path that when you stand by truth, Mata Sita, even in the kingdom of darkness, she stands by truth and by faith. So this is Swaraj. Swaraj is the ability to be such a master of one's own nature that one does not swerve. There is no fear of favor. But simply one thing, that I must be subservient to truth. And the mother put it very beautifully. Probably this, and then we'll take up the questions. She said it very interestingly. She said, when in 1971 she was asked for a mantra during the Bangladesh war. So look what mantra she gave. She gave a mantra for India, to pull India out of its difficulties. Supreme Lord, eternal truth, let us obey thee alone and live according to truth. This is the mantra, which is what is Satyameva Jayate. And only such a person can stand by truth, who is not only straightforward, who serves by no human opinion, is not worried about even what is going to be the result. See, Karma Yoga, we talk about Karma Yoga. What is the basis of Karma Yoga? The first practice of Karma Yoga is equanimity, and at the same time, you don't, swerve yourself based on the results. You don't try to manipulate a result. You live to obey the divine. The divine within and the divine in the nation. This is the basic. And the other things I have already told, so I will not touch upon that. that Janata is not Janardan, Nar is not Narayan, constitution is not Veda. We must understand the difference. And if we follow the Western model of parliamentary democracy and continue to believe it is they who have imposed upon us this idea that this is what is permanent, this is not permanent. We believe there is a greater permanent. And we must know that constitution to serve the truth. Humanity to serve the truth. In itself, it has no other importance. So this the background. Okay, so we just, I just complete this part where Sri Aurobindo says, those who are going to work for the future, they must have the firm faith that India must rise and be great, and that everything that happened, every difficulty, every reverse must help and further their end. I think this is just the right spot where we are reading, where we stopped. And this faith is important. Why do we swerve and end up doing things which, you know, we should not be doing? Because we are too much in a hurry. Because we are too much disheartened, too quickly disheartened. We become too impatient. So we have to work steadily toward the future. And he says that the dawn would soon be complete and the sun rise over the horizon. The sun of India's destiny would rise and fill all India with its light and overflow India and overflow Asia and overflow the world. Every hour, every moment could only bring them nearer to the brightness of the day that God had decreed. So this is the faith we must have, that everything, so-called reversal, all this is going to ultimately take us closer and closer to the future. And finally, a final word. So what we should try to do, we say to the individual and especially to the young who are now arising to do India's work. Looks like Sri Aurobindo is just speaking to us today. The world's work, God's work. You cannot cherish these ideals, still less can you fulfill them, if you subject your minds to European ideas or look at life from the material standpoint. This is the basic error. And every time that I hear so much talk about democracy is ultimate and constitution is ultimate, I say we are still a slave of the Western idea. And people say, what is the alternative? Come up, you can come up with new alternative, better alternative. Why not? It is challenging, yes, a work that would endure will be challenging. So this is where I feel there is a need to try to give a thought to this. Materially, you are nothing. Spiritually, you are everything. This is the second mantra that he gives us. That this idea of material success, that does not matter. Look at the life of Pandavas, look at the life of Ram. Those who are our ideals, how they have gone through Ram 14 years and all the challenges, and even on the battlefield all the challenges, he doesn't swerve even for a moment from Dharma. And I think that's what Sri Aurobindo wants us. At one point he said, we mere spread of the ideal is not enough, we want real yogins. That's why I keep saying, when people say that, you know, there are those numbers, people talk about numbers, it doesn't matter. Rabbits breed in plenty, but lion, one lion is a lion. You don't need 100 lions for, you know, for facing a flock of sheep. So this is what we must remember. It is only the Indian who can believe everything, dare everything, sacrifice everything. First, therefore, become Indians. This is happening now. I can see to an extent even in foreign policies we have begun to assert ourselves. So, very clearly the yoga has begun. And once it begins, nothing can stop it. No power, no political parties can stop it. It's just that who will take the crown, who will be more and more sincere. And that is for God to decide. First, therefore, become Indians. And what it means, recover the patrimony of your forefathers. Recover the Aryan thought, the Aryan discipline, the Aryan character, the Aryan life. recover the Vedanta, the Gita, the Yoga. Recover them not only in intellect or sentiment, but in your lives. It's another very important point where I think we lack very badly. We speak very big things. We love, you know, in all these satsangs, sabhas and, you know, Vedanta literature and intellectual discussions. But when it comes to life, this is what is important. We have to live it. Our actions, people should see and say that, oh, here is an Indian who has come. When I travel out, I would love to hear, oh, where do you come from? Bharat. Oh, this is what Bharat is. So this is what we have to recover it in life. And you will be great. Live them and you will be great and strong, mighty, invincible and fearless. I think fearlessness is a sign that we are on the right path. If we are afraid of anything, including afraid of losing, then we are not on the right track. Neither life nor death will have any terrors for you. Difficulty and impossibility will vanish from your vocabularies. For it is in the spirit that strength is eternal, and you must win back the kingdom of yourselves, the inner Swaraj, before you can win back your outer empire. How are we going to do it? There are various ways which we can, you know, talk about, think about. But at least something of this kind, very simple practice. We have so many, I'm nobody to give a suggestion to the parliament. We have these, you know, meetings which start, speak a traditional way. Can we have an invocation to Ma Bharati once a week or at least before the session? Why can't we do it? This is Indian. And an invocation to Ma Bharati. It need not be to a particular, and people may like it or not like it, doesn't matter. As I said, we are Bharatiya, so we should be proud of being Bharatiya. So these are the kind of suggestions, this is the kind of bold step we need. There the mother dwells and she waits for worship that she may give strength. Believe in her, serve her, lose your will in hers, wills in hers, your egoism in the greater ego of the country, your separate selfishness in the service of humanity. Recover the source of all strength in yourselves and all else will be added to you. Social soundness, intellectual preeminence, political freedom, the mastery of human thought, the hegemony of the world. This is a Tathastu by Sri Aurobindo. This is not just a roadmap, but we have to walk that path. And I love to be, you know, frank and bold. We have to understand that there are two roads India has taken. One is that follows the Gandhian ideal and the ascetic ideal. The other is the ideal of Krishna. And we must decide once for all what is the road that we want to take. We cannot dilly-dally between the two. They are dangerous. They are two very different roads. We can't be highlighting and, you know, talking about the great ascetics, lofty ascetics and Gandhian principles. At the same time, we want this India to become the India of Rama and Bharat and Shri Krishna. And of course, Sri Aurobindo. So this is the brief introduction. If you wish, the questions are there. I can take up the questions. Is it okay? So the first question is, or rather there is a background to the question. Sri Aurobindo withdrew from politics and freedom struggle during independence struggle. The mother has said that Sri Aurobindo's work has nothing to do with politics. No, she didn't put it in that way. So mother's words have to be seen in context. So she said that Sri Aurobindo deeply loved his motherland, and why he did not want people to go into politics, and even Sri Aurobindo came out of politics. We find when George Baptista had come, he was the president of the Congress that time, and he wanted Sri Aurobindo to go back. And Sri Aurobindo declined. And when people asked him, he said, because even if I go back, my ideas are so different by now that nobody will be ready to receive it and to put them into practice. Look at it even now, what Sri Aurobindo is saying. Worship her as mother. Do we have the courage to start that inner worship? As I said, just simply invoking, just simply starting the sessions with Bande Mataram. That courage is still missing. And that's why he did not go back to politics. Then the second reason he said, mother said, that because as of now, politics is a thing very dirty. Why? Because it is oriented towards success and ambition and lust. This is the problem. And unless people win the Swaraj within, it will be dangerous. By all means, if you are inwardly free, if you are like King Janak and he gives that example, by all means, you can be anywhere. Or you can even become, go on the path of inner freedom while in politics, if that's your destiny and you are placed there. But one must know the difficulty, because immediately calculations come in, immediately all the practices that we decry in others, we end up doing it. Why? Because we want to win the race. Politics should not be an instrument for winning a race. Politics is an instrument to serve the country. And this idea that we can only serve if we are having numbers and we are in powers, we must get rid of a lot of baggage that we are carrying. And for this reason, the mother would generally... Also, second thing is that the yoga, particularly Sri Aurobindo and the mother's yoga, its scope is much beyond. So what is the premise of this yoga? Its premise is that man being what he is, you may try governments, you may change systems. That's not going to change the conditions of the world. You have to change the man within. And that's why Sri Aurobindo's aphorism that this erring race of mankind always believes that by changing government systems and machinery, it can arrive at the perfection. But then he says, that which thou art within, that outside thou shalt enjoy. So that is a big challenge, that first step first, and that is discover the perfection inside. You may do it while going through politics if that's your destiny. But generally, they drag you in opposite direction, and very few are strong enough. The classic example was, see, I'll give two examples. One was Surendranath Johar, who was in politics, and Nandini Satpathy, who was in politics, and Indira Gandhi also, who was in politics, Vajpayee ji, all of them received mother's blessings. And Nandini Satpathy used to come here. Later on, she fell out from Indira Gandhi, and through her, mother would send messages to Indira Gandhi, and you know what she must do during the 71 war. How much she listened, didn't listen is a different story altogether, because her force was there. She did not tell Nandini Satpathy, you are my devotee, come out of politics. Surendranath Johar, there was a work, he has even come here and given a talk, and he was used as an instrument of Sri Aurobindo. But to Anil Baran and many others, he said no, because it's a question of what is more prominent in you. If the call of yoga is strongest, then call of yoga is strongest. So that's what is important. So Anil Baran went away, and see what happened. He started some spiritual unity party and wanted to merge India and Pakistan, because he wanted to fulfill that dream, and ended up messing things. So she didn't say an absolute no. She simply cautioned us, and this caution is more like a mother cautioning that child, do you know where you are going? You are fishing in muddy waters, or worse still. So you have to understand it like this. Still, if there is a very strong inner inspiration that we must be in politics, and at the same time there is a pull towards yoga, go through it, try to practice it, and practice the Karma Yoga of the Gita. That's the best yoga that one can practice. But the yoga of transformation is a very, very specialized thing. And that should not meddle into anything, because it's about changing man. When man changes completely, then probably when he comes out and does things, things will be different. So the question is, if there are no good people in politics, it appears as if the Asuric forces will engulf the political arena too. Yes, so good people should be in politics, but there is a difference between being good and being a yogi. Yogi is beyond good and evil. Good people, motivated people who want to serve the country should be in politics. Nobody should dissuade them. But if the call of the yoga is strong, like in Buddha's case, Buddha has a call for the yoga to redeem mankind. He can't be told serve the Sakya kingdom, because what will happen to the Sakya kingdom if you go away? You are a good person. There the call of Buddha stands, because Buddha has to come back as a world redeemer. That's his destiny. So there are those who have a call for the yoga, and they must take up yoga. But they are good people who are not yet ready for yoga. Maybe they are preparing for yoga. Maybe deliberately God has put a veil because he wants them to be their instrument in politics. So they don't, everything is there, but God is not wanting to reveal that part, like Swami Vivekananda. Deliberately a veil was put over him, and Ma Sarada told, the day Narendra realizes who he is, he'll run away. So a veil was put deliberately. So there are people in politics, and they will come in politics, who are either not yet ready for yoga, but are good people. Sattva guna sampann, with that touch of rajas. Politics cannot be done by entirely sattvic people. It is primarily rajasic in nature. So the ideal person for politics is rajasic, but under the strong influence of sattva. And if such a man can open to the divine influence, then he will become the really the master leader. And that opening does not depend on religiosity. Look at Winston Churchill, he became an instrument. Napoleon became an instrument. So this instrument of God, yes, anybody can become, but that requires a strong nature. Strength is so important to be able to do God's work. Unswerving, fidelity to truth, whatever you believe in, you stand by that. So this is how good people should be in politics, definitely. But yoga is a different thing altogether. What can be done to reconcile these two apparent opposite sides? If the call of politics is strong, turn politics into a means for karma yoga, because that's what is possible within the realm of politics. It's very difficult while being in politics to participate in the yoga of transformation. So one has to understand the difference between the two. But if the call of yoga is strong, then follow the call of yoga, because that way you will fulfill the greater destiny of India, which is to become one day a spiritualized nation, not a secular, not a religious, but a spiritual nation. So often people ask about, you know, there is a question, I'll answer that about Hindu Rashtra. Okay, so this is one. Then Sri Aurobindo talked about internationalism, which is largely Hindu but broad enough to encompass Muslims and other communities. However, Islam has been hostile towards anything which is Hindu. Hindus are termed infidels. What could be the roadmap to make Muslims integrate with the Indian nationalism, which is for them Hindu nationalism? Don't try to do that. Lift yourself very high. That's exactly what the mother said when people attacked the ashram, because they thought that ashram is a Hindi speaking area and it is a North Indian. They wanted to create a North-South divide. The Christian missionaries and the DMK party, they were the ones who attacked. The mother didn't call the DMK party people and tried to explain that, see, we have Tamil devotees here. Look here, why don't you talk to them? She didn't try to assuage the Christian missionaries that, see, we also believe that Christ is an avatar. None of that kind. She gave a message that we lift the ideals so high, that those who have the eyes, they can see it. She didn't lower the ideal even one bit. So we should not worry about integrating. We should have the strength and manhood. This is the path Sri Aurobindo said. He said how? He said we should have enough strength and manhood. He didn't say any outer means. In fact, he was strictly against appeasement. So any kind of appeasement is dangerous. So he has said very clearly, and we should not follow the path of appeasement. We should be ourselves, our highest self. And if we are our highest self, we should not worry. The rest will follow suit. So this is the important part. We have to be true Hindus, true Aryans. The Muslim brothers, it is their work to integrate. We should not go out of the way to try to integrate. And when we live a high of life of high ideals, great truth, I am sure their younger generations will see. You see, people respect it. I have seen it in Air Force, in the Indian Air Force. I didn't used to like going for parties, and I disliked that whole culture of, you know, wine and all this nonsense. Some very rare parties I went. So people said, no, no, you should do that. When people come home, you should give drinks. I said, no, I won't do that. Initially, people didn't understand. Later on, everybody respected. In fact, on the farewell, they will say, we respect him for his integrity. We don't realize the power of leading a life of integrity. We don't have to try. That's hypocrisy is precisely what we should not indulge in. So that's the path. And it will have a great effect, because it's not just about leading an outer life. It's the inner life. When the Muslim brothers, they will see, here is an ideal. Here is a man who is not trying to please us, but he stands for what he believes in. That's what they will be attracted towards. And that's how we see even among the great Muslim leaders. I heard Abdul Kalam in one of the close conferences 2020, and he started with the Upanishadic saying, strength, respect strength. Never go before falsehood with a weak face, apologetic face, and trying to, you know, see, we want you to be with us, you are our brother. Be strong, but strong with the inner strength. And when you are strong within, then automatically those who are ready, Vibhishan could see Dharma is with Rama, and one Vibhishan came. Doesn't matter. But a whole Lanka cannot stand. So we have to have faith. That's why we read, we must have faith. If all life is, so roadmap is become Indians first. Roadmap is to live the great iron ideals. And the rest will follow. The third is, if all life is yoga, no part of life is untouchable to sadhana. Absolutely true. How can a sadhak reconcile sadhana with the world of action, which is transactional? No, the world of action. Action is a means to manifest. Action is a means to discover, to progress, and finally a means to manifest the divine within. So action is wonderful. But the motive behind action must change. That's what the Karma Yoga of the Gita is about. He says, Arjun wants to really move away from the field of action. And what action? The action of the deadliest kind. Shurbitu's own example is there. And he gives his own example. He says, I have indulged in the politics, his own example, and in an action of the most dangerous kind. So he will be in the field of action. Action is transactional in the sense only that, well, if we do it with that idea that I am doing it for this person or that reward, then it becomes transactional because there will be a rebound. But when we do action in the spirit of Nishkam Karma and only the spirit of service to the divine, God within, God in the country, God in the world, then it's no more transactional, because then we become free from the bondage. This is what the teaching of the Gita is. That do it as a Nishkam Karma, do it as an offering to the divine, remember God within, and act without, choose without preference and desire, and act without and execute without desire. So that's what yoga is about. To make sure that ego and its masks, ego can wear many masks. As I said, sometimes people, it wears this mask. If I'm in power, then only I can serve God or the country. This we must get rid of our mind. I know of a man who believed that if I have lots of money, I can offer to mother. So he took a lot of shares. This is a real story I'm telling you. And his shares, multiplied. Money multiplied. So he said, oh, this is good. I had put in some hundreds of rupees. Now it is in thousands. He said, okay, let me get more. So he put that money with the idea of offering to mother. Thousands multiplied into lakhs. I'm telling you a real story of a sadhak here. Then when lakhs came, 10 lakhs came, and now he got an urge, I should offer it. Maybe little more. He put that money. He lost his head. When he died, he had 1 crore 25 lakhs unclaimed. So we must understand, it's putting the cart before the horse. Primary business is yoga. And from the yoga, things should flow. What we are within, only that can flow in our actions. So we should not try to pick, okay, somehow I must get power, any which way. Once I get power, I'll serve the country. No, because we have basically gone after power. Now power will chase us. And it will chase us very badly. It will use 1,000, because then there is another time again the same thing will come. Maybe little more power. So it's a vicious cycle. We have to see the game. And yes, we have to practice the Karma Yoga. And my own companion guide for Karma Yoga has been Essays on the Gita and the Synthesis of Yoga. Having read several versions of the Gita, which did not satisfy me, it is this which made me feel, Essays on the Gita, that here are the answers. So I think that's where the question is. Even while it is relational, it is still imbued with the vital impulses and desires. But that's precisely what Karma Yoga is about. That can we do action as a Jivan Mukta, free from ego and desire? The whole gospel of Karma Yoga stands on this possibility that yes, it is possible. And Sri Krishna and Sri Aurobindo's living examples are there. The mother's example is there. And Arjun at least tried to follow that path. So we have example. And many others, I'm sure, who didn't talk about it. So, hence the trust propensity decreases. How to maintain a balanced attitude towards life as we see it and the inner attitude of sadhana. See, we cannot step in two boats. We can be in the world, but not of the world. But we cannot be in the world and of the world at the same time in the divine and of the divine. Then we'll be torn apart. We have to make a decisive choice. Sadhana is about making a decisive choice. God and God alone. Yes. What about the world? World is an instrument to serve the divine. What about me, my life? It's an instrument to serve the divine. And with that story of Yajnavalkya, maybe we can pause unless there is some other question. Yajnavalkya is asked by Maitri, why does one love the child? Why does one love the wife? And we may say, why does one love the country? And what is Yajnavalkya's reply? One loves the child not for the sake of the child, but for the sake of the self. One loves the wife not for the sake of the wife, but for the sake of the self. One does not love the country for the sake of the country, but for the sake of the self. As is the self, so is our love. If the self is divine, we have discovered it, then we would love the child for the sake of the divine possibility in him, and not so that he can serve me. If the self is divine, one would love the wife not for the sake of being my wife, but because she has been brought by destiny in a kind of relationship, but my work here is only to help her to the extent I can and to the extent she is receptive and ready to realize her own divine possibility. One serves the country not because it's just my country, but because this country where I am born and brought up today, I may be born and brought up in another country, another community altogether, but today that's where God has placed me. And if I can, through this love for the country, from my highest self, can this country also become my little contribution towards it becoming closer to the divine truth within it? That should be, as far as sadhana is concerned, that is the goal.
Can
you
take one more question?
Yes, of course, any number.
The question is, how to do sadhana with no rules?
Okay, so how to do sadhana with no rules? So there are steps and stages. I suppose it's being referring to that Mother and Sri Aurobindo have given minimum of rules and maximum of freedom. So what it means is, rules are generally things imposed from outside. When you impose a discipline from outside, or when you do it either because of fear or because of social conformity, or because, you know, there are people who are observing you that every day you should follow this rule, then that rule brings very little result. And I can give an example. Soldiers are trained. You see, anywhere, soldiers are so trained, and to an extent that they master many elements within themselves. But the moment they leave services, they may, or their situations are different, they may be just like any other ordinary person. So here, rule means that there are no external rules binding a sadhak. Nobody should tell me that I should sit and meditate. Nobody should tell me I should love God. Nobody should tell me that I should practice Nishkam Karma. Nobody should tell me that every day 6 o'clock in the morning you have to go there and sit and, you know, offer flowers and do this diyabati. If I do it as a drudgery, I am following a rule, but I am not forming a living communion with the divine. So rules are needed, but not external rules. Discipline works when we impose on ourselves. And why would we do it? If we have the aim. If actually my aim is to realize the divine, if I am true to myself, I would automatically, you know, put certain rules of self-discipline. But these disciplines and rules will not be absolute, because as the state changes, so will it change. For example, we have a little seed inside a soil, then somebody has to watch over it. So there is a stage of sadhana when somebody watches over you. Very early stage. When somebody has to see that, you know, you are not swerving. Then when it is like a plant, you have to put a little fence around so that animals don't eat it away. You have to put it inside a fence. And then when it grows into a tree, a little bigger tree, then that fence is removed. Yet a storm or a typhoon can break the tree. So that tree must stand with other trees. So that, you know, there is a kind of protection. But when it has grown into a fully developed banyan tree, then it needs nothing. It gives shelter to many on the other hand. So we have to understand the stage of sadhana, like Sri Ramakrishna. On one side he talked about Kamini Kanchan so much. But to Vivekananda, what did he say when people came and complained about him, or rather jealous people who spoke not very kindly about him? He said, oh, Narendra, even if he goes outside and he is sitting with, you know, women and having wine, Narendra will only end up purifying them. So it depends on the stage. In the beginning, when the flame is very small, you need to protect it. But when it is a fire, then even the storm will feed the fire. And when it has become a column of light, then there is total freedom. But this cannot be done by external imposition of rule. If you are sincere, you self-discipline. And if you cannot self-discipline, it means you are not sincere. As simple as that. So, who is the loser? I am the loser. I have a goal, but I am not sincerely following that goal. That's what is meant by no rule of sadhana. Also because there are different people with different temperaments. If I want to commune with the divine within, which is what yoga is about, automatically my nature will impel me that, okay, meditation, you want to sit quietly, you want to more and more be indrawn. Your nature will tell you. But somebody may say, I want to serve the divine. Whole day he may want to serve the divine. Somebody else would be, Mato Samvareka Rangarachi. That love will blossom. So again, you can't make universal rules. The problem with rules is that it doesn't take into account the variety and differences of human nature. So that's why no rules. But no rules doesn't mean an indisciplined, whatever I feel like doing, licentious life. No rules simply means there is no external imposition. That's what there is in the ashram. She says that here, in fact, to complete, here there are no rules. But there is an internal test to which the sadhaks are subjected very strictly. Now see internal tests. And then she says the most commonplace things, the most, you know, things which you may not give much significance. Somebody comes and tells you something. Oh, you're not looking fine. He has gone away. Now that's where, or somebody has not appreciated your work or criticized you. That's where you have to be vigilant. You can be caught unaware. Now which rule is going to teach us this? Because these things come very in an unexpected way. So for a sadhak, he has to keep a vigil over himself. That's what the Gita says. That awake when all are asleep. It has another meaning also, but this meaning also. Or it is said in the Upanishads, awake as the adept says, surasya dhara. So surasya dhara is not, nobody is subjecting us. But one has to oneself, if this is the goal, this is how my life should be. And this too, as we evolve, will change based on the stage. That's why some people make it a rule that no, you should never go out of the ashram. Yes, for many, it's a rule, good thing. But to others, the mother herself allowed to go out of the ashram. Somewhere here, there were others, Sri Aurobindo and the mother said that they are disciples who are outside. So we can't make them like universally applicable to each and everyone. It depends on the stage, temperament, unique destiny and many other factors besides. So it is self-discipline and not externally imposed rule that is meant here by no rules. It certainly doesn't mean licentiousness and certainly not that I can be indisciplined, do what I feel like and, as Sri Aurobindo says, laissez faire attitude and arrive at the kingdom of heaven. Yeah. That's it. Okay.
So we'll
okay, so we'll take it up next time. Okay.